Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony Orchestra opens its new season with two world premieres by American composer Samuel Adler, bookend by two masterpiece works by Beethoven, the Leonore Overture No. 3 and the Symphony No. 5. Soprano Sarah Coburn will premiere Adler's song cycle Those Were the Days, based on poems by Donald Justice, and violinist Siwoo Kim returns to premiere Adler's new violin concerto, a commission by the Rotary Club of Tulsa in honor of their 15th anniversary of the Crescendo Music Competition. My guest today is guest conductor Philip Mann, who's the music director of the Arkansas Symphony and a young American conductor to watch. Mann previously held positions with the San Diego Symphony, the Indianapolis Symphony, the Music in the Mountains Festival, and two UK institutions, the Oxford City Opera and the Oxford Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, where he studied as a Rhodes Scholar. He's currently guest conducting with Cleveland Orchestra, Quebec Symphony, and the Georgian State Opera in Tbilisi. He'll be conducting the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night at the Tulsa PAC. The concert gets underway at 7:30, and he joins us today as our guest on Studio Tulsa. Philip Mann, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks.
The opening Tulsa Symphony Orchestra concert features four compositions, but only two composers, and sometimes orchestras will do that, where they'll book in compositions by one composer, but not often two composers. And in this case, it's Ludwig von Beethoven and Samuel Adler. What are your thoughts on the overall program?
Well, a few things, really. I mean, first off, I think it's a very bold choice of the orchestra to have two world premieres on their season opener. It's not something, I think some people might shy away from that, but in this case, it's going to be fantastically successful. And what could be really more appropriate for the newness of a season, the new energy and excitement and exuberance that you want to permeate the rest of the year, than to hear two pieces for the very first time? And of course, Samuel Adler with the Beethoven is the other side of this. And I think that the combination of those two composers is a particularly tasty one. I often think about mixing repertoires in the same way one might work in a kitchen. And certain flavors just work together. And Sam's music, along with Beethoven, they complement each other very well. They both have a great virtuosic kind of primacy of rhythm. And then they're both such great innovators with orchestration that the combination of the two gives you an opportunity to hear Sam in a very new way. And what we always hope, and one of the great reasons for including new music on programs, is it allows you to hear something that is so familiar, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, with fresh ears.
Right. And in the case of Adler, I also think he has such a strong architectural sense, which, of course, is the foundation of Beethoven's music.
Absolutely. I mean, all four pieces have these incredible pieces of architecture built from motivic units that expand into these grand forms. And from a conductor's standpoint, one of the challenges of this program is with four large works to get architecture right in all four of those works. And it's something that I'm really pleased with in hearing how capable, how talented, and how just the level of artistry that's apparent with the Tulsa Symphony. It's exciting for me to be in a community, a city of this size that has such a flourishing symphony orchestra. It's a happy orchestra. It's an orchestra that is craving inspiration, and as a conductor, it's a joy to work with them.
Doesn't that happen every week?
You always want it to, and you always hope that there's going to be chemistry. And I've lived a charmed life so far with orchestras that I've worked with, and things have gone very well. But, you know, it's a little bit like dating. You don't know what that first spark's going to be. What's the chemistry really going to be? And with this orchestra, I imagine they have great chemistry all the time.
We just have to remember that an orchestra is a workplace. Some workplaces are very happy. Some are happy sometimes, and then some are unhappy at times, isn't it?
Yeah, it's easy to forget that people have lives outside of music, and they bring things to the rehearsals, they bring things to the performance. And I like to remind myself before working with orchestras of that often, because one of the great things a conductor can do is remind the musicians of why we got into the business in the first place. And the solution for that, for me, my personal answer to that, is just to make sure everything we do, whether it's what we talk about, what we rehearse, it's all about the music. And if you always make it always about the music, you're always on the right side.
Yeah. You mentioned the architecture of all four pieces. And with those arcs, it would be challenging with two brand new pieces. Now, obviously, you've studied the score ahead of time, but still, until you actually hear it, you know, there's always something new in the hearing from looking at the score.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that's the mark of a great composition as well. When you open up the score each time, if you can find something new, a new way to listen to something, a new way to interpret a phrase, Beethoven 5 being a great example. We all know Beethoven 5. We've heard it many, many times. But to to open it up and look at it with fresh eyes, the way I would hope our audience will hear it with fresh ears. That's the true mark of a masterpiece. You know, at the same time, I think for an orchestra to be playing new works, the process that happens is almost like an elucidation of what is behind the notes. The music pops up from the screen, but when you hear it mixed together, the combination of sounds, the way the orchestration brings things to life, for me, it's looking at something in two dimensions, and then you add all of this, and suddenly you're looking at it in three dimensions with color and texture and form and this great palette that Sam is particularly adept at, one of the great living orchestrators. The song cycle that we're going to hear is a great example of that, where you hear it with piano and the soprano solo, and you can just imagine it opening up with the full complement of a symphony orchestra, and he has done it masterfully.
And in fact, the song cycle was originally written for just piano and voice, and for this world premiere, it is an orchestration of it, and he's actually added a song as well.
That's right, and the poetry, the text, and the music all seem particularly suited for orchestration. Donald Justice's poetry, it's full of nostalgia, but there's also little moments of whimsy and charming, witty turns of phrases. And Sam has taken that and he's infused the music with those little brief interludes of sparks of energy and whimsy that particularly in an orchestrated situation, it's that much more effective. As opposed to just maybe something that the right hand's doing at the piano, you hear a new person, a new instrument, a new sound bringing that idea to you.
Now, I'm going to take one brief moment out of that song cycle, out of context, but mm-hmm. there's a line in one of the poems that says, "The dead don't get around much anymore," and this doesn't reflect the whole piece, but he just couldn't resist putting a Duke Ellington quote in the music. What was your first reaction to hearing that?
Well,
Or is it hidden in a way in which you actually have to, that is that?
Well, I mean, it's from the poetry, of
right.
course.
Yes.
So we joked about it that we got the tune wrong. But of course, we all know the song "Don't Get Around Much Anymore," right? You know, and for people of that generation and of that decade, it's often cited as the greatest song written in that time. So it's ubiquitous in that way. But you'll hear moments of Beethoven 5 quoted as well. There's all kinds of other things to listen for in there. In fact, the fourth song, Mrs. Snow, you'll actually hear Beethoven 5 opening it.
Oh, that's right, because Mrs. Snow is a piano teacher music teacher. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, we're looking forward to that. My guest today is Philip Mann, music director of the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, and he'll be leading the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in their opening concert of the year, featuring two works by Beethoven and two world premiere works by American composer Samuel Adler. And Adler's been through here a few times and actually started working as a professional musician in Dallas. So even though we think of him as being East Coast, he actually started out here in the Midwest and in the South. And when we were talking earlier about Beethoven 5, he says the challenge is to hear it with new ears. And I'm going to ask a dumb question.
No such thing.
No, it is a dumb question, because how can you pick out one part of the Beethoven 5 that, you know, is just the great moment for a musician? I'm going to do it, if you allow me to be so presumptuous. I think the moment I love the best in the whole symphony, and it's a stupid moment, but a fun moment, is the low double bass C in the second movement, which punctuates each variation, the return of the and I just live for that big, strong, low C in at the end of each variation. And I think it's a great moment, and it's just a single note.
That's a fantastic one to choose, in fact. I think there's so much magic in the second movement, the economy and clarity of the orchestration and the way it stacks different things on top of each other. And really, we often use the word sublime too much in classical music, but there are moments of the sublime in that second movement. And, you know, I think when you think about the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, it's kind of like, where do you start? You know, there's so much baggage. We bring so much to the table. But what I like to remind orchestras is, as many times as we've played that, as ubiquitous as that first ba-ba-ba-bam is, you know, probably the most recognizable piece of music man has ever penned, there is still going to probably be a majority of people in the concert hall who are hearing that piece live for the first time. And if we can remember that, then the ferocity and the terror and the striking suddenness of that first opening gesture can have renewed meaning for us. And then moving beyond that, just the importance of the way that motive is handled in the first movement. What a masterclass of composition. What a watershed moment for the entire art form that you can't say this about too many pieces. And for Beethoven, he has at least two of them with the Eroica as well, where it's hard to hear music the same way after hearing it. And once you've studied that piece, the Eroica the same way, it's hard to hear any piece of music in the same way.
No, you have that great opening movement, which is a master of counterpoint and architectural construction of the symphony form. And then you have the great theme and variations. Then you have this lovely little scherzo that just builds like a wind, like a thunderstorm, if you will, and ends with the fourth movement.
I mean, the pyrotechnics, especially in the celli and bassi, the cellos and basses, that really stretch people's techniques at the time, and now is a showcase for the great level of playing that's become commonplace in those sections of the United States, that launches us into this last movement. And I think when you hear the finale of Beethoven's symphony, it's a good reminder of the showman that was also in Beethoven's character. We think of this gruff, testosterone-filled man who is prone to bursts of strong energy, and these, you know, a fortissimo in Beethoven has a particular grit and a meatiness to it. You know, when you think of a beer drinking kind of that, not the person you'd run into at the court so much. And the showman comes out in this last movement, where you can attribute a great deal of this piece's success to the finale. We know the first movement, but the finale, the exuberance of it, the absolute joyfulness of the triumphant finish of this piece, it wouldn't be Beethoven's Fifth without that great finale.
Let's hear a little music from the Beethoven Fifth. Let's hear the opening of the finale, which leads right directly from the third movement. It's one of those great crescendos that are great to hear. Music by Beethoven, which the Tulsa Symphony will play this Saturday night. Music from the Beethoven Symphony 5, one of the featured works to be played by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra, and my guest today, conductor Philip Mann, who is the music director of the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra. Well, as we mentioned, there are two world premieres on the concert, the song cycle, which we talked a little bit about, the violin concerto is the other. Now, this is his first violin concerto, and this is his instrument.
That's right, and it's something one of my first questions to Sam is, what took you so long? You know, he's such a prolific composer, many, many concerti, countless works of chamber music, lots of orchestra works. And his own instrument, the violin, he's waited until now to pen a concerto. And he said he wanted to be very careful about it. He'd certainly been asked before. And what he's come up with is really a delightful, refreshing approach to a concerto I shouldn't say completely refreshing in the way that there's great precedent for this, but it reminds me in some ways of Brahms's approach to the concerto, where the orchestra is an equal partner. It's a collaboration between the conductor and orchestra and a soloist, where in many cases you'll actually hear the most virtuosic passages played by the section musicians of the orchestra. It has three movements, and it's a work that begins with tremendous vigor and this real tactile feel of rhythm that I think will really speak from stage. There's a earthiness to it. And our soloist is tremendously talented. Let's put it this way. Sam has written some particularly challenging, gnarly bits into the playing of the violin. So what we call them in the business is tough licks. There are a bunch of tough licks in this one, and tough licks for the orchestra too. But the orchestra is playing them spectacularly well. They're going to acquit themselves with aplomb. The first movement has this great vigorous character, and the second movement is much more lyrical, much more beautiful. It opens with a oboe cadenza. He's added a big violin cadenza at the end, and then we end up with this very rhythmic, cheerful, incredibly spirited third movement that I think is going to have the audience bouncing in their seats and jumping to their feet.
Now, earlier you were talking about when composers will write a piece that puts the soloist and the orchestra on equal footing, if you will. A lot of times, some of those don't get played because the soloist thinks there's not enough flashiness, you know. And it sounds like what he's done is combine the best of that, of really giving him a virtuoso part, but also giving an orchestra part that stands up to that virtuoso part.
You know, it's a comment I hear a lot. The Brahms Violin Concerto, you know, I've heard oboists say, oh, we're proud that we got the most sweet melody, that great oboe solo that then becomes the theme that the violin plays. But truth be told, I don't think I've ever had an experience with a really fantastic soloist, a really fantastic artist, who didn't really want to play that kind of repertoire, because ultimately great music making always feels like chamber music. And when an orchestra is really at the top of its game, it feels like a great string quartet performance or a piano trio performance. And to have that kind of collaboration between an orchestra and soloist, that reminds us of what's so special about what we do.
Well, we have two works by Samuel Adler in the middle of the program. The Beethoven Fifth is the finale. The opening is another one of these perfect, it's called an overture. I really think it's a symphonic tone poem. It's, you know, it's 15 minutes. It's a long overture. And in fact, it was such a great overture that it overshadowed the opening of the opera. So they ditched it when Beethoven wrote the Leonore Overture No. 3, which is actually the second overture he wrote for Fidelio. And it is, again, a great orchestral piece.
Well, you nailed it, Rich, in the sense that it fits more into the tone poem genre than it does an overture. It seems to encapsulate so much and so many different emotions, so many different characters, that by the time you finish the overture, you almost would need a break before the opera starts. So in that respect, it's a little bit of a failure. It's not a great overture. A great overture gets you revved up to hear the opera. You feel satisfied after hearing Leonore No. 3. It encapsulates so much and finishes with such, well, the range of human spirit and emotion that you hear in this piece, I think, is perfectly suited to an overture. You hear this opening chord that is deeply dark, oppressive, perhaps. And we go through this transformation where we hear different voices. We only hear a few things even from the opera in that respect. It's almost like Barbara of Seville of Rossini, in that you really don't get much from the opera, but there's so much to love about the overture. I mean, you hear the offstage trumpet calls from the opera, and you hear Florestan's aria, and you hear when the police chief comes in, you hear a little bit of music from that. But really, it's its own piece. And you begin with this oppressive sound, but you finish with joyful feelings of perhaps deliverance, more than just exuberant, excited playing like you'd hear perhaps in the finale of the symphony, but there's an upward feel of freedom.
Yeah, and that's why it's played on the concert stage rather than the opera house.
And another piece of C major. We have this, you know, if there's a real struggle on this program, it perhaps may be between two modes, C minor and C major. We have a lot of C minor and then two great works that give us very satisfying C major to finish.
Yeah, that's interesting. My guest today is Philip Mann, the music director of the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, who will be leading the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in their opening concert of the year, featuring the Leonore Overture No. 3 and the Symphony No. 5 of Beethoven, and a violin concerto and a song cycle by Samuel Adler, which are both world premieres. I want to talk a little bit about yourself, if I could. Looking at your vita, you have done an awful lot of studying, and it looks like you wanted to be a conductor from a fairly early age. Was that the case? And if so, why?
Well, that's nice of you to say. I appreciate that. And, you know, it's interesting. I didn't actually start conducting until I had already had kind of a small career in physics and engineering and doing lots of other things. And suddenly a whirlwind of opportunities opened up in about 2000 for me. And since 1999 or 2000.
So when won your Rhodes Scholarship, I'm assuming it wasn't for music.
Well,
was it?
I was the first musician ever to be awarded a Rhodes Scholarship to go to Oxford and study music. There are other musicians who have done it, like Chris Christopherson, but none of them were there to study musicology and things like that. So, but that being said, I mean, when I was so fortunate, I mean, what a charmed existence that, and what an incredible opportunity that was for me. A big part of why that was afforded me was that I was more than one-dimensional, and that I'd been doing the 7 hours in a practice room. But at the same time, I was writing political science journal articles and working in physics and engineering. And I like to think, and I share this with orchestras, and I think when we come to particularly a great piece of music, we bring everything with us that we've always carried around, that baggage, that our life experiences. Maybe it's our loves, our losses, maybe it's our hobbies, maybe it's our travel. And ultimately, for a conductor, I think your most important responsibility is to have an opinion about everything. So I like to think that keeping a full life of lots of opportunity, lots of different pursuits and interests gives me more to say on the podium, and it certainly helps me to connect with audiences. So that's a long answer to your question, but I have a lot of interests outside of music, and I think it keeps my decision to go back to music fresh and invigorating.
Well, it's interesting you say you have a science and engineering background, because that would be very surprising, but when I look at what you've done as you learned your craft, it has sort of a scientist sort of, you went to Oxford, you learned everything you could about English music and the English style. You went to Russia, you went to Salzburg and learned the Viennese, from the Viennese masters. And not necessarily the schools, it's an international school now, but there's certain things you'll pick up in every culture, as well as America.
Absolutely.
Was that actual thought, or it just happened that way?
It was consciously seeking opportunities, and then never being able to say no to anything. I mean, there were a few things that my first few opera jobs, I would say, were some of the most formative for me in really giving me a different perspective on conducting. When I was the Carillon Fellow with the Vienna Philharmonic at the Salzburg Festival, that was during the Mozart 250th year. So hearing every Mozart opera, going through all of the symphonies, that will change you, and it will change your approach to music. Coming from the United States also gives you another perspective, particularly with the incredibly vibrant composition scene here. Sam and I have been talking about that all week, where just the number of sheer great talents of composition that are currently riding in the United States, it gives me personally a lot of confidence and optimism about the future of our art form. At no point in human history has more music been written, and the level of playing in orchestras worldwide has never been higher. I like to think about that when you hear Beethoven 5 in the rehearsal, and you think, Beethoven would have been lucky to hear his music played at this standard.
Right, exactly. Well, one of the things I noticed is you did have either were mentored or studied or even maybe just were colleagues with a number of great conductors, Leonard Slatkin, Michael Tilson-Thomas, Simon Rattle, Robert Spano, just to name a few. Is there a piece of advice or concept that has stayed with you through your professional work that helps shape your own concept or your performances?
That's a very good question.
I mean, obviously a lot of things happen, but is there something in particular?
Well, my mantra is it's always about the music, and that sounds banal and maybe cliche, but it's amazing, especially the modern life of a conductor, how 99% of the things you encounter can take you away from the music. And to always return back to the score and making sure that everything you say, everything that you do, everything that you plan to do is rooted somewhere in serving the music, uplifting the music. It's easy to get off track. Keeps you on track.
Give us a sense of the 99% of things that can take you away of the music.
On the business side, it can be all of the different things that you have to do during the week that might take you away from score study. It might be development work asking for money. It might be doing marketing work. It might be doing lots of media appearances. In rehearsal, it might be the tendency to want to get more accomplished and not focus on those truly special things that you want to elucidate from the score. It could be, there are some conductors perhaps that are putting on an extra show for the audience and maybe not always focusing just on bringing what's magical about the music. I mean, there could be a myriad of things, and I'm certainly not calling anyone out here. It's just easy to lose track because we're offered so many stimuli, and there's always jet lag. There's the international travel. There's the burning fires to put out all of the time that we all experience, and I find it very comforting to come back to the music. I would say another answer to your question is that ultimately most really great music is vocal music, whether it's really truly being sung or it's being sung through an oboe or sung through a violin. To remind oneself when looking at what looks like a two-dimensional score laying on the desk in front of you that everything really can be sung. And that approach, particularly in repertoire like Schubert, Brahms, Mozart, Tchaikovsky, Mahler, and then even into new repertoire, it helps you to for things to connect with you. And I find that phrasing becomes more natural, becomes more compelling, and audiences pick up on that.
Is that something to keep in mind with contemporary compositions? Because so many contemporary compositions are so rhythmically vital that we sort of forget melody at times. And sometimes melody is... It's subservient to rhythm and harmony.
That's sometimes. Right, and every piece is different. You know, sometimes it's melody, sometimes it's the harmony that's the most important. But often, you know, it can rhythm, melody, harmony. It's often a sliding scale of those three things. But I've been thinking a lot about, like I'm saying, vocally singing phrases. Here we're doing two works of Sam Adler that have a real vigorous rhythm and a structure built around that. And I'm doing Rite of Spring next week. And it's nice to also take oneself back and remind that there are these other elements that, you know, it gives you an opportunity to pull something unique out of something where one might not immediately see it jumping from the page. Yeah, I like to remember something when I do new music, and that's, I think it's easy for young conductors to, this is what I tell my students, if you're handed a new score and you've never seen it before, it's easy to open that score and then just go through it as if it's a new work, and you approach it from a different perspective somehow. Maybe it's not looking at as much color or texture or finding those incredible things that have already been recognized by generations or centuries of musicians as pieces of a masterpiece. I tell them to open it up like it's an unfamiliar masterpiece. Find what's special about it, bring it to life, and the audience will embrace it. The great success of a new work, you know, the goal of every premiere is for it to be embraced by an audience, for them to take ownership of it, to say, that's our work. That's our Adler Violin Concerto world premiere. We did that, and we want it to launch that work on its new life. We want to give it legs.
Yeah, and of course that happens all too seldomly today, unfortunately. But let's hope it happens this weekend with these two works, and you have the composer there. How important is that for a new work for a conductor, having the composer there?
Well, first off, it's an incredible honor. Sam is eminent. He's a legend. He's done it all. He's a great conductor, a great composer, and his legacy precedes himself. So first of all, I'm honored to have him sitting next to the podium to consult with as we bring these pieces to life. But it's also, from a pragmatic standpoint, incredibly helpful, incredibly useful. One of the main goals and jobs of a conductor is to elucidate those things that we find particularly interesting or compelling about a work. He might be bringing out the second oboe part here, or making sure that that beautiful line in the trumpet doesn't cover up the equally beautiful line in the contrabassoon. You know, and it's nice to have the composer there to turn around and say, are we on the right track here? You see what we're working at? And to make sure that his intentions, it's not often that you get a chance to consult with the composer. I tried to get a hold of Beethoven this week, and he was unavailable. But Sam's right there, and I say, well, your intention is this. I see what you're trying to do. Are we bringing the orchestration out the way that you'd like to hear it? So it's an honor, and it's also pragmatically very useful.
Philip Mann, thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, this was a great time. Thanks so much.
Guest conductor Philip Mann leads the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in concert for the opening concert of the season with two world premieres by American composer Samuel Adler and two works by Beethoven. That's tomorrow evening at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall at 7:30. For ticket information, visit tulsapac.com. By the way, the symphony will actually be playing this evening as well at the Guthrie Green Symphony in the Park tonight, a free concert at 7:30 at the Guthrie Green. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.